This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. In about 4 hours, former President Trump will be arraigned 2 days after his federal indictment. CBS's Scott McFarland says most of it will happen out of the public view.
He'll enter through that garage. There's a private elevator that goes up to the first floor area outside the U.S. Marshal's office. He'll be processed there, likely some fingerprinting and some record keeping. They won't take a booking photo of him. Then he goes to the courtroom itself, where he faces the magistrate judge in a proceeding that they do every day here. This should move efficiently.
A judge in Pittsburgh today will impose the death penalty a jury has recommended for the synagogue gunman. Lee Stein lost her father in the 2018 attack that left 11 dead.
I feel like a weight has been lifted, and I can breathe a sigh of relief.
Texas Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton dealing with some of his legal woes today that he has blamed on political opponents.
Paxton's facing an impeachment trial in September, but today's status hearing in a Harris County courtroom had to do with his 2015 indictment for securities fraud. Paxton's accused of defrauding investors in a tech startup back in 2011. He's facing two felony charges and a third-degree felony charge. Special Prosecutor Brian Weiss.
No one's above the law. While the wheels of justice may have appeared to move with glacial pace in this case, I think we're about to pick up speed.
Paxton claims he did nothing wrong, saying the charges were motivated by political rivals. Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
Hyundai and Kia announcing a recall of more than 90,000 newer vehicles, as we hear from reporter Jeff Gilbert of affiliate WWJ Detroit.
The worry is an electric controller in an oil pump can catch fire. No real-world fires reported, but there have been 6 reports of melting components. The recall impacting a number of Kia and Hyundai products from the 23 and 24 model years.
Saudi Arabia says it's going to extend its production cut of 1 million barrels of oil a day through the end of September in an effort to boost energy prices. Correspondent Chris Livesay is in Portugal along with hundreds of thousands of others from all over the world.
World Youth Day has been dubbed the Catholic Woodstock. And Pope Francis is their rock star.
I absolutely love Pope Francis.
This is the church.
These kids are from Norwalk, California. Each had to raise $3,500 to get here. George and his parents paid his way with tacos and tamales.
First thing in the morning, we would grab everything, go to the church and set up. And then sell when the mass would finish.
And checking Wall Street, right now the Dow is down 41 points. NASDAQ is down 3, and the S&P 500 is down 9 points. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state, and in your own backyard. This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The 45-page indictment against former President Donald Trump mentions a number of people and events in Wisconsin linked to the alleged conspiracy. But State Attorney General Josh Call is not saying if he's working on his own investigation.
I know that the federal government not only has announced that it was investigating this issue, but now there have been charges against Donald Trump. I fully support that effort and think it's vital that people who committed crimes to an attempt to overturn the results of the election are held accountable.
It's the third time Trump has been indicted on criminal charges. This time, special counsel Jack Smith alleges the former president conspired to overturn the 2020 election. Trump is set to appear in a federal courtroom in Washington, D.C. this afternoon. The vice president is in Wisconsin today. Stuart J. Waddles has a preview.
Kamala Harris will talk up the White House's efforts to invest in high-speed internet in Kenosha County this afternoon. She'll explain how it will boost manufacturing and grow jobs in southeast Wisconsin. The visit comes about a month after President Biden announced Wisconsin will get more than $1 billion to expand high-speed internet access in rural and underserved areas. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo will be there too. After visiting Kenosha, Harris will go to Milwaukee for 2 campaign events. Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media News.
A Milwaukee County judge is in charge of Wisconsin's court system for now. Audrey Skoroski was appointed late yesterday after Randy Koshnick was fired. She'll take a leave from her Milwaukee job since the state judicial code requires it. Liberal justices are not saying why they fired Koshnick. Chief Justice Annette Ziegler is criticizing the move. She says the decision was made without regard for the Constitution, case law, or Supreme Court rules. The president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council says the decision is deeply troubling. In a letter to the State Journal, he says that the court's four liberals need to explain their reasons. Koshnick was the director of the state court system since he was appointed in 2017. Republicans say a new lawsuit challenging Wisconsin's legislative district maps is baseless. Mike Moen has more.
Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu, a Republican, says the plaintiffs are counting on a judicial fiat to gain power. The senator contends the current maps are valid and constitutional. However, Mark Gaber, who leads redistricting efforts for the Campaign Legal Center, points out that for several years now, Wisconsin's political maps have been skewed in such a way that voters have never had a legitimate chance to elect a Democratic majority for the legislature.
Not just the Democratic voters of Wisconsin, but independents and Republicans who might sometimes wish to switch their views in a certain election.
In last year's election, Republicans won 64 of 99 assembly seats, along with 22 of 33 state Senate seats. That's despite Democratic victories in three of five statewide elections. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
Local officials are revoking the Minocqua Brewing Company's operating license. It happened after a contentious meeting of the Oneida County Planning and Development Committee last night. Owner Kirk Bankstead has had several confrontations with local government over the years. He says last night's decision is retaliation for his political views and that he plans to keep his tap room open. But members of the committee say Bankstead has committed several code violations. Speaking of beer, the strike at Leinenkugel's brewery goes on. Union workers sat down with company officials this week, but left without a deal. Chippewa Falls brewery workers say they want higher pay and other concessions. The company says it's made a generous offer. There aren't any new meetings on the schedule. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. Striking union workers at the Leinenkugel's Brewery in Chippewa Falls said no deal was reached with parent company Molson Coors in a recent meeting as the strike continued into its third week. Nearly four dozen workers are seeking better pay. Molson Coors said its offer has not changed since the start and that it was offering better rates than union jobs for the same positions in the area. The union said it will continue the strike and said it hopes for a better offer. Molson Coors had previously said that the strike won't affect production or sales for its Leinenkugel's products. One person is hurt after a home exploded near Ladysmith yesterday morning. According to the Ladysmith Fire Department, a gas leak caused the explosion around 10 a.m. yesterday in the town of Grow. The injured person was taken to a hospital. No other injuries were reported. The home is considered a total loss. A man is dead after a standoff with law enforcement in Osceola. At 10:15 yesterday morning, Osceola police were called to a home for possible domestic abuse. A man was outside of the home and fled inside after police arrived. According to a release, police held their positions for several hours before hearing a gunshot from inside of the home. When they went inside, they found the man dead and said that he apparently shot himself. An autopsy is being done at the Ramsey County Medical Examiner's Office. The death is under investigation by the Polk County Sheriff's Office. No one is hurt after a vehicle went through the window of a downtown La Crosse car dealership this morning. Employees at Pishke Motors, which is on 4th and Cass Streets, said two vehicles crashed in the street, with one of them then coming through the window of the showroom. No one was near where the crash happened. The La Crosse Police Department has not released any details about the crash. Tuesday's drawing for a jackpot worth over $1 billion didn't have a jackpot winner, but somebody in northwestern Wisconsin became a millionaire. The Wisconsin Lottery said that a $1 million winning Mega Millions ticket was sold at the Quick Trip in Bloomer. The winning $1 million ticket was one of just seven sold for Tuesday's drawing nationwide. The jackpot for Mega Millions grew to an estimated $1.25 billion with the next drawing tomorrow night. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
And now, your Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. It's beach weather today. Highs will climb into the upper 80s to low 90s. Thankfully, though, the winds will provide a decent breeze out of the west up to 15 miles per hour and eventually turn northwest as a cold front sweeps through the state from north to south today. However, this has the potential to spike up some isolated scattered showers and storms after 2 p.m., starting in northern Wisconsin and heading southeast through the afternoon and evening hours. Drought conditions slightly worsened over the week along the western edges of Burnett and Polk counties and also into central Washburn, where an extreme drought remains. Nearly 13% of the state is still experiencing extreme drought conditions, targeting the lower Wisconsin River Valley and the south shores of Lake Superior, with 82% of the state still in a drought. More widespread rain is expected by Sunday. Have a tremendous Thursday and stay cool, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The Brewers fall to the Nationals. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It was the bottom of the ninth. Milwaukee up 2-1 on the road in Washington. Andrew Monasterio playing third when he made a wild throw to home, allowing two Nationals to score for the win.
Ellis call, left side. They're going to come home.
Oh, no!
Highlight courtesy Nationals TV network. So the Brewers lost 3-2 to a struggling Nationals team that took the series 2-1. Do you blame the lack of offense or defense? Manager Craig Counsell.
Well, I mean, I think you could say both. We swung the bat good early in the game. You know, some loud outs, some just missed balls. You know, we had a big opportunity with the right guys up, and we didn't cash it in. I don't think we played well enough to win.
Lefty Wade Miley gave up one run in four innings in his first appearance in nearly 2 weeks after getting that plasma injection for pain in his left elbow.
I don't know if it was fatigued or I just let myself get so quick. There's a couple pitches I threw that I felt like I had a chance to get an out and I didn't execute them, and I maybe got a little frustrated. And instead of taking a step back and executing a pitch, I tried to go faster and it just snowballed a little bit.
The Brewers open a 4-game home series tonight against the Pittsburgh Pirates. NFL, after two seasons, the Packers have released linebacker Ladarius Hamilton. Jair Alexander was asked, what was that dispute between him and Coach Joe Barry over the defensive game plan last year?
I mean, I think last year we was making a bunch of excuses for ourselves, and Joe Barry can go out and call whatever call he wants to, but at the end of the day, we got to execute that call, and I think we were making a lot of excuses for why we wasn't, you know, especially early on in the year. So I think that's the biggest thing that we've come together as a defense on.
I asked Jordan Love if mentally he prefers to work on one aspect of his game at quarterback one day at a time.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's all about what you focus on, and that's been a key for me. Is I really wanted to focus after that first day is completing those deep balls. I felt like I was underthrowing them a little bit. And, you know, Matt, we talked about it again, just letting it rip, and that's been my mindset. Is just throw it out there, give him a chance to go get it. If I'm gonna miss, I'm gonna miss deep. I'm not gonna underthrow any balls. So that's been my mindset and something I've been focusing on. And obviously now the footwork thing is something that I want to focus on now too.
The Wisconsin Badgers had their first practice at UW-Platteville. New head coach Luke Fickell on what the first day of camp means to him.
I know for me as a coach, it kind of gets me back into the mode, right? I'm not old enough that I can't go home and still stay focused and come in the next morning. But there's just a little bit of something for me of going away. There's an anxiety. Like, I didn't sleep well last night. You know, there's an anxiety. But I think anxiety for me is good. It's a motivator. It's what's kind of happening, what's going to come down the path the next, 20-some days.
That's the Badgers' new head coach, Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Does your financial strategy include your hopes and dreams? What matters most to you? For over 100 years, Thrivent has helped clients like you find financial solutions for life's important goals. Explore a full range of options, from financial advice and investments to insurance, banking, and generosity programs. To have a heart-to-heart about your finances, contact Mandy Roberts, who you may recognize as Mandy Wright. Call her at 715-470-1303. 715-470-1303. Mandy Roberts proudly serves the Central Wisconsin area. For more details, visit thrivent.com/disclosure.
All right, folks, let's get started. Parents, thanks for coming. As many of you know, I'm Coach Mather. Tonight I want to talk about the season, of which I only have one expectation, that everybody gets stronger. When I say get stronger, I'm not referring solely to physical strength. Sure, we'll be in the weight room, we'll be running stairs, but we're also going to focus on developing mental toughness and grit, because those are the characteristics that allow us to achieve greatness both on and off the court. So how do we develop those things? By getting comfortable with a challenge, by cultivating the confidence necessary to overcome adversity in all forms. That's why I coach. That's my purpose. Every member of this team can lean on me, and I'll teach them how they can lean on themselves and each other.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny, high of 90. Partly cloudy tonight, 64. Mostly sunny with a high near 88 on your Friday. For Friday night, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-60s. Slight chance of a shower Saturday, otherwise clouds in 81. Showers and thunderstorms are likely for Saturday night. We'll see a low of 63.
Right now, it's 84.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Joining us today, this is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution, and we have a full house today. Gentlemen, how are we all doing? We'll start from the bottom of my Zoom screen with Mr. Luke Mathers. Luke, how you doing on this Thursday afternoon?
I'm good. It's a busy week around here. It's incredible how quickly time flies when there's so much to cover.
Time is an illusion, Luke. And next we got Aaron on the ones and twos. Aaron, how are you doing today?
Doing well. It's nice to have a little furry friend in the office with us. Luke brought his dog, Rem. Yeah.
Remy's just chilling by my feet right now, so it's an interesting Thursday. So he's hanging out. Got a little bit of a different schedule today, so brought the pup along to the office with me.
Maybe I'll have to go get Sammy and they can like play Zoom tag or something in the background. I don't know. But we are excited, as always, today because class is in session and Professor John Shelton is joining us. Four office hours. Professor Shelton, how are you doing this Thursday?
I'm doing good. Nice to see you all. You know, it's August now. So this is your reminder that all that stuff that you wanted to do this summer, we know how quickly things turn. You got like 4 weeks to get it done. So I know I'm thinking that way.
I'm currently sanding away the outside of the house, hoping to get it still primed with this nice weather and painted still before the fall. So I'm right there trying to get everything done off of the to-do list, Professor Shelton.
There you go.
Good luck with that, Luke. So,
yeah. And we got today, we got the state fair kicking off today, too. So that's kind of one of those markers, knowing that back to school time is right around the corner. State fair kicking off in West Dallas today. And if you've been listening to Civic Media and you won some tickets with us, we hope you enjoy the state fair now through the 13th.
You know, Luke, have you ever heard the it's kind of a long running Twitter meme, but you are taking a nap or something and you wake up in a frantic rush because you're like, oh, my God, I'm late for school or something. And then you remember you're in your mid 20s. I just had a moment like that when you mentioned the state fair. I was like, oh, God, I got to go back to school again in a couple of weeks. And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. Now I graduated a long time ago.
Hey, I'm an education lifer, so I get those still, you know, like I gotta be in school in 4 weeks.
That was the low key shot at you, Professor. Uh-huh, I wanted to drop that without being the one that has to deal with it. So today, Professor, I want to focus on higher education. Particularly, obviously, in the United States, but I wanted to have a conversation with you as to why higher education is both essential for a healthy democracy and what we as individuals can do to save public education. I know you sent me a very, very interesting release earlier today. If you'd like to give the audience a little bit of coverage in that regard.
Yeah, sure. So this is something that's just developed today. UW Oshkosh, which of course is one of the 13 campuses in the UW system, just announced that due to a budget deficit, which they didn't say it this way, but I'll say it, it has been completely manufactured by the state not investing in our UW system. They're going to be cutting positions. Didn't announce exactly how many, but people are going to lose their jobs. They're going to be giving furloughs to faculty and staff. So that effectively means, you know, because in the UW system, we care about our students. We want them to have the services that they need. It effectively means we'll be working without, they'll be working without pay. But when we've had furloughs in the past, that's what that means for a period of time. Increased teaching loads, you know, which means, you know, students obviously getting less attention from faculty, you know, when faculty have to teach more students. So this is the fallout, not just of the budget, which if people have been paying attention to that, and we can get more into this if you want, the UW system was one of the few, maybe the only public institution, but certainly of the kind of size and scale in our state that took a budget cut. The UW system lost about $35 million in this past budget cycle when the state had a surplus of $7 billion, right? And continues
billion
to have
a, with a B.
Exactly. And continues to have a budget surplus of, I think, about $3 or $4 billion. I'm not certain about that, but it's quite an extensive amount of money, about $4 billion. You know, this is just a choice, right? And Republicans did this. Evers unfortunately signed the budget. I think, and a lot of my colleagues think he should have vetoed it and basically told them, come back with something that actually funds this vital institution that's so necessary for our state. But now what's happening is campuses like Oshkosh, and, you know, I think it's quite possible there will be more in the next month or so, are going to start making these announcements. So this was all done because Republicans like Speaker Robin Voss don't like the fact that in the UW, we're having conversations where we're asking students to think critically and, you know, to think about some of the you know, big inequalities that exist in American society and in American and global too, history, right? And so they don't want us teaching about these things. And so the idea was we're going to punish the UW system. And the fallout of that now is that students, it's going to fall on the backs of students, right? You know, certainly faculty will have money taken from their salaries at Oshkosh. And again, some people will lose jobs. And those are really, really important consequences. But you know, for those people, and I don't want to belittle them, but really this is about the future generations of our state and what this means for our students not being able to have the same access to resources that they might have had, all because of this political agenda of Republicans in the legislature. So this is a really dark day, and I think people need to pay attention to this because there's going to be, I think, more of this happening in the next few months.
Folks, you're listening.
I don't think it's... Oh, go ahead, Luke.
Folks, you're listening to Town Call. That is Professor John Shelton joining us for office hours here on a Thursday afternoon. I'm Luke Mathers. He's William Walter. 844-967-2789. If you want to share your thoughts on the state of higher education here in Wisconsin, you can call or text 844-967-2789. You're listening to Town Call across Civic Media. And Professor Shelton, as earlier today, the story broke over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and there is a number too for the estimated amount of layoffs or budget cuts for staff that this is going to lead to. The piece over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, written up by Rory Linane and Cleo Krajic. UW Oshkosh plans to cut about 200 non-faculty staff and administrators this fall while furloughing others. UW Oshkosh Chancellor Andrew Leavitt said Thursday, as the university faces an unprecedented $18 million budget shortfall. But that $18 million, as you pointed out, we saw a cut in the UW system investment. Roughly, I believe the number is around $4 billion still in surplus that the state has after this most recent go-around for the budget. Is it... It seems like it's a choice to not fund the UW system. It seems like this was the decision that was made through this budgeting process. Do you believe there's time between now and the semester? As we've joked about, it's only 4 weeks away. Is there time still to be able to have lawmakers and policymakers here in Wisconsin address these shortcomings and head off these layoffs?
Well, you know, first of all, Luke, I just want to say thanks for pointing out that specific number. I'd heard a couple of things through the grapevine, but hadn't seen that story yet, mainly because I've been on the phone with people all morning about this, pretty much up until the point I came on the show. But you know, that's a staggering number of people, right? I mean, you think about those 200 people who, you know, are going to lose their jobs and, you know, more than likely. And what that means, not just for them, but their families, the kind of economic insecurity they're going to feel, what it means for their communities, because, you know, all of those people are going to spend money in Oshkosh, right? And what it means for the kind of services that they provide for students that students will no longer have, right? Because you know, what are you going to take away from students, right? So that's deeply distressing. Now, the short answer to your question is, of course, the UW, of course, the legislature could revisit this and, you know, could make the right decision and fund the UW system, right? You know, the deficit Oshkosh, you know, I'm not a math person, so I don't speak to the accuracy of that, but let's take that at face value and say that that's an accurate representation of their deficit. That certainly wasn't something that was accrued in the last, you know, year, right? This is the product of over a decade of systematic disinvestment in the UW system, right? So there were two different Walker budgets that each cut $250 million out of the UW system. One was Act 55 in 2014, I believe, is when that went into effect, that he called the Act 10 for the UW system, right? And that was at the same time that the Bucks Arena, they got almost the exact same amount of money that got taken from the UW system. You couple that with a tuition freeze, which, you know, has actually only been lifted this year. We've had 10 years of a tuition freeze. Now, that's great for students, right? I want our students to have a tuition freeze. Long-term, we should have fully funded tuition-free higher education in this state. But the problem is when you cut budgets and you freeze tuition, there's no source of additional revenue, right? And so this has been basically a decade of institutions like UWO trying to kind of paper over the fact that they're systematically underfunded because of the conscious choices of Republicans in the legislature, right? It's been Republicans that have been in charge of this almost the entire time. So sure, at any point, they could revisit this in the next week, fully fund the UW system, and Oshkosh could avert these cuts. And, you know, one of the things, I think y'all know this about me already, but I'm president of my union, my faculty and staff union at UW-Green Bay. And I'm also vice president of higher ed for AFT Wisconsin. So I've been in touch with some of the leadership at UWO already, the union there, United Faculty and Staff of Oshkosh. And, you know, they're going to be mounting a response. They've in the past helped to avert job cuts when the administration wanted to outsource custodial. That was just last year. So this isn't anything new to them. And, you know, for the faculty and staff who care about this and the UW system, we're organizing, we're fighting back. And, you know, if you're a faculty or staff member at Oshkosh or somewhere else and you're not involved in your union, let me know. And I'll get you started. I promise you.
One thing that I want to note, John, is it's not hyperbole when you state that that these systemic cuts were quite literally designed to attack the system because of DEI initiatives. Remember, the $32 million that the Republican lawmakers cut in state funding for the University of Wisconsin systems in the 23-25 budget was exactly the amount, according to Speaker Robin Voss, that they determined DEI initiatives are costing the state. So they were essentially telling the UW system, either get rid of these programs that we don't like, or you're going to have to make cuts somewhere else. That is a threat. Am I mistaken?
No, that's correct. And it's an attack on, you know, the academic freedom of our universities, right? I mean, because all DEI is talking about how race, gender, sexuality, and class have impacted, you know, American democracy, right? That's all. It's no different than, you know, what we've been doing in higher education for decades now. But this has been weaponized by, you know, Republicans with this sort of axe to grind, this political agenda, trying to score political points from it, as that party has moved further and further to an extreme, both nationally, as you see in Florida and in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Folks, and we gotta stand up against this.
Folks, that is Professor John Shelton. You are listening to Town Call across Civic Media. We're going to continue the conversation. If you've got questions for the professor during office hours, we want to hear them. 844-967-2789. Town Call is going to be right back.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Former President Trump will appear in a federal courtroom in Washington in a few hours for his arraignment. CBS's Scott McFarland.
The hearing could take just minutes. We expect the former president to plead not guilty and potentially hear some release restrictions from the magistrate judge, potentially on his conversations with witnesses and travel.
A Pittsburgh judge set to impose the death sentence a jury has recommended for the man who carried out the 2018 synagogue massacre. Martin Gaynor is a congregant.
Anti-Semitism and hate have no place in our hearts, no place in our communities, no place in our country, and will not be tolerated.
South Korea reporter Alex Jensen on an attack in that country that's left at least 14 injured.
A man reportedly hurt four people when he drove a car onto a sidewalk before stabbing several more people at a department store.
CBS News Brief. I'm Steve Kathan.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. Tuesday's drawing for a jackpot worth over $1 billion didn't have a jackpot winner, but somebody in northwestern Wisconsin became a millionaire. The Wisconsin Lottery said that a $1 million winning Mega Millions ticket was sold at the Quick Trip in Bloomer. The winning $1 million ticket was one of just seven sold for Tuesday's drawing nationwide. The jackpot for Mega Millions grew to an estimated $1.25 billion with the next drawing tomorrow night. Striking union workers at the Lion and Kugel's Brewery in Chippewa Falls said no deal was reached with parent company Molson Coors in a recent meeting as the strike continued into its third week. Nearly four dozen workers are seeking better pay. Molson Coors said its offer has not changed since the start and that it was offering better rates than union jobs for the same positions in the area. The union said it will continue the strike and said it hopes for a better offer. Molson Coors had previously said that the strike won't affect production or sales for its Line of Kugel's products. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
It's so hot. Wait, now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need, only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app. She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Flowers, vegetables, and crab apples, some of the first Marathon County Fair attractions, and showed us proof those crops could grow there. Started in 1868 by the Agricultural Society, the Wisconsin Valley Fair in Wausau began as a place to buy and sell those types of goods. Today, it's considered one of the best in the state, featuring displays, demos, and big-name entertainment included with the price of your ticket. The Wisconsin Valley Fair runs August 1st to the 6th in Wausau. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
X gon' give it to you. What? Wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to you. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real. With the non-stop pop out and stay.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. We got office hours going on today. Class is in session. If you have a question for the professor or anything you'd like to share with the class, give us a call, 844-967-2789, or shoot us a text. We will not confiscate your phone, I promise you. That was a big issue back when I was in high school. I can imagine it very likely still is, but...
I- High school teachers have given up on that now.
Yeah,
have
parents. They? Oh parents, yeah. Parents won out that fight. It was like, I get to text my kids whatever I want and stuff like that, and you can't get upset with my child because they're on a phone when I've had my phone confiscated before because I was texting in class. That no longer the case.
Yeah, I have several friends.
That was the problem when I was in high school. Yeah,
I have several friends who are substitute teachers in high school, and they'll be like, okay, all right, class, we have a few expectations. You just need to figure out this worksheet. You can go on your phones as much as you want as long as you do it after the worksheet. All right, so you can go on your phones as much as you want as long as you finish the worksheet first. What do we need to do? Hey, Jim, are you on your phone? Or what expectation are we failing to meet right now? And like just for like 10 minutes at the beginning of class, repeating the same thing over and over, and they still don't do it.
The machines have won. This is the real Terminator scenario.
Folks, you're listening to Town Call across Civic Media. As Will said, if you want to, participation is highly encouraged. 844-967-2789. You can use those.
One
phones.
Might say it's part of your grade, Luke. Yeah, it's 10% of your grade is participation.
Here on Town Call, we encourage the phones to be used. 844-967-2789. Discussing a story that is developing right now in the Fox Valley. We are learning of potential furloughs and large cuts to the faculty at UW Oshkosh, University of Wisconsin Oshkosh campus. The piece over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel referencing the number 200 roughly of non-faculty staff, and so it will be an interesting development to keep an eye on. But this isn't the first time, even since the budget negotiations started earlier this year, about UW campuses that are going to have to either make drastic cuts or close entirely. We saw from UW Richland Center that the UW Platteville Richland Center extension, 2-year local school, is going to be shutting its doors. And so this is not just a one-off instance for the Fox Valley. This isn't just something that UWO is struggling with. This is going to be something that we're going to continue talking about, a part of the UW system. In part because of the history that you've described, Professor Shelton, over the last 10 years. What can you share with us about the 2-year campus aspect of what is facing the UW system right now?
Yeah, so folks who have who know a little bit about the history know that in the 1970s, they're going back to the 1970s, when the UW system was put together, it was formed in 1973, I think, somewhere around there. There was a system of 4-year schools. So there were 13 4-year campuses and 13 2-year campuses. And so this is, you know, folks from other states might notice that we don't really have community colleges here the way that other states might have them. The 2-year schools were really our system of community colleges. And then, of course, we have the technical colleges too, which, you know, there are folks that are doing really incredible work in the technical colleges. But the 2-year campuses, you know, because of systematic disinvestment, many of them, there's a longer dynamic here, but one of the things that happened is as 4-year campuses started competing for more students, they started sucking up a lot of the students who were on the 2-year campuses who would traditionally be kind of their entry point to the UW system, right? Or maybe just getting an associate's degree. So some of the 2-year campuses, many of them were losing students by like 2017. And our previous system president, Ray Cross, ordered the 4-year campuses and 2-year campuses to merge, but to merge in a way in which nobody had any say in it. None of the faculty had any say. None of the staff had any say. Actually, none of the chancellors really even had a say. They were kind of blindsided by it. And Cross just basically told campuses, these are the four-year campuses. These are the 2-year campuses that you're going to merge with. So UW Green Bay, we got Manitowoc, Marinette, and Sheboygan. Other campuses like Platteville got Richland Center. But there was never any conversation about, you know, what would be the best fit for people, right? Are there certain things happening on these 2 years that work better with certain 4 years? There was no conversation about that. Now, on my campus, Green Bay, we've done, I think, a really, really good job of working to reinvigorate those 2-year campuses. And, you know, they're all, you know, we have new programs there and we've done a really good job. But I think that's mainly been because of, you know, the efforts of administration and faculty and staff here. That's not the case everywhere. And so Richland Center, you know, only had, I think, like 60 or 70 in-person students when the decision was made to shut it down. This was back in the fall. UW System said they were only closing in-person instruction, but that effectively means that you're closing down the campus, right? And, you know, one of the things that I know has been happening, and this is not secret information, but I don't think there's been any news stories about this, is that UW System has essentially told every campus that has one of these former two-year campuses as a branch that they need to evaluate them and come up with basically an assessment of how things are going, what things are going to look like moving forward. And the implication to that, and from what I've heard, this is going to happen relatively soon, like end of August soon. There's going to be a conversation in UW System where they use that information to determine whether or not to close additional two-year campuses. So this is coming much sooner than people think. And you think about what that does, right? I'm not going to say that like UW System should never change anything, but that entry point to in some of those places, you know, Richland Center, you know, you mentioned, or Manitowoc, Marinette, right? Those kinds of places, Waukesha, some of the other two-year places, Barron County, you know, these are entry points, especially for place-bound working class students who need access to higher education, and to just basically eliminate those campuses without a lot of thought and a lot of consideration and really honoring how those access to education is going to continue for all those folks is just wrong. And it doesn't have to be this way. The reason that UW System is in this position is because, again, our political system, led by reactionary Republicans in the legislature, have sought to defund higher education at every turn. That's just I wish I could like make it more nuanced than that, but that's just what's happening.
Well, and I think, Professor, could you kind of touch on, because a lot of these issues I do feel are intertwined, and we're seeing it with high school education and below in particular with the private school vouchers, right? The systemic attempt to prove public education is inferior, therefore we have to provide these other opportunities. And it's creating kind of a tiered system of education, which allows those who are wealthy, powerful, connected to receive a better education with better connections, thus kind of a continuation of the status quo, right?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question, William. That's such an important question, because if you kind of look at big picture, what it is that, you know, the right is trying to do right now. You know, what does a public education system do? What is its function, right? And this was the very premise of this show, right? Like, why is higher education important? When the education system was founded in the 19th century, with all of its problems, right? We know that in the 1830s and 40s, African-American kids were largely excluded, et cetera, from public education, certainly in the South and in most Northern states too. So I want to make that really central to this conversation. But the idea was to create a common American culture, to have people of different religions and ethnicities come together and have a common education about what it meant to be a citizen in American democracy. The same is true of higher education, right? When students come into the UW system, they come from urban areas, they come from rural areas, they come from working class backgrounds, middle class backgrounds, some upper class backgrounds. And what we do on our campuses is we provide them a space to encounter ideas that they may have never encountered before. It doesn't mean that we're indoctrinating anybody. I can't even get some of my students to read my syllabus, right? Like, I'm not indoctrinating anybody, right? I wish I could get them to, if I could indoctrinate them, they would be able to write the kind of essay that I wanted them to be able to write probably more frequently. But what we want them to do is to be able to confront different ideas. Just as we want to facilitate a common culture in K-12 education, that's the whole purpose of public education. What Republicans want, and this is so deeply unfortunate because they claim the mantle of patriotism, but when you think about what patriotic really means and what it means to love American democracy, it means having a common society where everybody learns from each other. They want to destroy that. They want kids to be able to grow up in an alternate reality where they go to religious voucher schools and, you know, don't learn about diverse kinds of people or learn a distorted view of the American past. And the same is true in higher education. That's why they want to go after us, because they don't want the future generations of people in this state to again engage in critical thinking and you know learn about race and gender and sexuality so that we can create the kind of multiracial democracy that we all deserve. They want them to go back to that $32 million that you talked about, right? The other piece of that is They took it out as the exact amount that Robin Voss says that we spend on DEI. But what they also said in that legislation was that universities can apply to get that money back if they use the money to develop the workforce needs of the state, right? So what this is about is not teaching people critical thinking and instead, you know, working with employers to turn the UW system into something closer to the technical college where we're meeting the needs of direct needs of employers. That's not the traditional mission of the UW system. It's just not. And they're going after it because they don't want it to exist. They don't want public education to exist. And I'll say one other thing. My partner is the representative from the Green Bay area, Christina Shelton. She just attended the ALEC conference in Florida. There's a piece about this that just came out in the Wisconsin Examiner that people should check out. And the vouchers were a huge component of what ALEC was talking about. And the reason they were talking about it is because what they were saying is they want to construct a society where basically education is just a consumer good, where everybody goes out and they can have the kind of education that meets their own cultural norms. How do you have a society if that happens, right? What it means to be an American is for us to all encounter different ideas and connect with each other and to be able to navigate complex ideas. You can't do that if you all have dramatically different educations with dramatically different ecosystems. And frankly, in the case of some of these religious voucher schools, different facts.
And ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council, for those unaware of that organization, a very powerful lobbying group that essentially will create pieces of legislation that are drafts and share around to states around the country. And so that lobbying group, a very powerful one as well. So if that is the mission of ALEC, I would not be shocked to see potential more legislation from that popping up here in Wisconsin, if that is a priority of that body. Folks, you're listening to Town Call. I'm Luke Mathers. He's William Walter. We are joined by Professor John Shelton of UW Green Bay, talking about the value of higher education here in the state and some of the current headlines with the UW Oshkosh announcing, the chancellor of UWO announcing today some furloughs coming, the state of higher education after this most recent budget. If you've got some questions or just thoughts you'd like to share with us here on Town Call, 844-967-2789. Will, I kind of cut you off there. You have a question?
More of a statement, but it's a conversation that the professor and I have had in the past, which is essentially I think it's about control in a way as well. It's a lot easier to control a population that is not free thinking, that is not able to critically analyze their surroundings and their situations. Instead, I think a lot of these elected officials would rather have higher education be simply a place to prepare you to be kind of in a factory setting, get you to be able to mentally understand the fact that your role is the cog in the machine. You come to work, you do your job, you go home. We don't want you being a free thinker. We don't want you being able to analyze your surroundings. We don't want you to be able to question us, because if you do, then the whole house of cards will fall on its head.
You don't even have to go as far as the whole house of cards, right? Although you may be right about that. I don't know. That's a bigger conversation for a time. We have more space between the now and the commercial break. But what I do know is it makes it more difficult for those workers to challenge the fact that, say, they're getting subpar wages, or they deserve a union, or their employer is not providing them adequate health care, right? So those things are absolutely directly linked. And you think about the conversation we're having last week about the Teamster and how that fits in.
Folks, you're listening to Town Call. You can also follow the show on X or Twitter at Town Call WI. We're going to continue the conversation with Professor Shelton and our office hours on this Thursday afternoon, 844-967-2789.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' Hot Cheetos Chicken on a Stick? Deep-fried Old Fashioned? Or Pino Pretzel Popper Brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Dallas. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long, close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino Pretzel Popper Brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network. She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny, high of 90. Partly cloudy tonight, 64. Mostly sunny with a high near 88 on your Friday. For Friday night, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-60s. Slight chance of a shower Saturday, otherwise clouds in 81. Showers and thunderstorms are likely for Saturday night. We'll see a low of 63.
Right now, it's 87.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From the California to the New York Island.
Welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. Office hours is in session today. We are joined by Professor John Sheldon, and we're talking higher education. Luke, I know there was a point that you wanted to get to that we weren't able to quite cover. If you'd like to go in that direction right now.
Yeah, and we discussed in that last segment talking about the cogs in the machine, the changing and meeting the workforce needs, which is something that is a recurring point that lawmakers, Republican lawmakers here in Wisconsin, have been looking to try to make a change, because the core of the UW system here in Wisconsin is centered around the Wisconsin idea, the sifting and winnowing of thoughts and ideas to be able to improve our state. And so when you move away from that, and I'm not trying to say that there is not a need for technical colleges or making sure that we do have the resources to meet workforce demands, but the UW system has not been centered around that. It has been centered around the Wisconsin idea. And it's not just this most recent budget that has done it. As you've alluded to, this is a recurring theme over the past 10 plus years that Republican lawmakers have been working to do it. And they've kind of downplayed it in the past, but by chalking it up to a drafting error.
Yeah, and let me just say right off, let's talk about what the Wisconsin idea is and what it isn't, okay? Because you hear the Wisconsin idea all the time, you know, everybody kind of in higher ed talks about it, and you know, you hear administrators talk about it sometimes in a way that isn't exactly what the Wisconsin idea is, right? The Wisconsin idea isn't just anything that the university does in the community. It's actually much, much broader than that and deeper than that. And folks should really check out a book edited by Chad Goldberg, sociologist at UW-Madison and president of United Faculty and Academic Staff there, called The Wisconsin Idea, where he historicizes this and contextualizes it. It's really, really good. But the Wisconsin idea, if you take it all the way back to the late 19th century, right? What was happening in the late 19th century? Well, it was the Gilded Age, and you know, children were working in factories, and workers were organizing and walking out, and wealthy political interests had excessive power in the political system, right? I mean, does all that stuff sound familiar? That sounds pretty relevant today, right? Especially, yes. We even have Republicans trying to roll back child labor laws.
Well, history doesn't repeat itself, Professor, but it often rhymes.
There you go. So the Wisconsin idea was, you know, obviously formulated at the University of Wisconsin, but it was, how do we use, research and scholarship and critical thinking to solve the state's most pressing problems? And, you know, those faculty at the at the UW in the late 19th century and early 20th century, they didn't shy away from saying things like, maybe workers need unions, and maybe there's good evidence for that. Maybe there need to be reforms to actually reduce the power of the wealthy in the political process. Maybe there need to be things like workers' compensation, which Wisconsin was the first state to have workers' compensation in the country, right? That's the actual legacy of the Wisconsin idea. And you can see how that's deeply threatening to legislators who really only want to advance the corporate agenda or the agenda of millionaires and billionaires, right? The budget that the Republican Senate of Joint Finance, that Evers line item veto, at least that part, would have given millions of dollars of tax cuts to just a handful of millionaires and billionaires.
1.8 million average, exactly, professor, for exactly the 11 filers in the state that had more than $75 million in income. 11
exactly
people in the state of Wisconsin.
Exactly. So what the Wisconsin idea is, we use the UW system to help make everybody's lives in the state better, right? Whether that's using research to push for new policies or political changes, or just helping students to become the next generation of folks who can go out and change the world, right? Who can go out and work in nonprofits and become labor activists and become labor lawyers and environmental lawyers, right? Like, that's what the UW system, that's what its mission really is all about, and why it's so essential that we continue to fund it at a level that gives every student in the state access to whatever their aspiration is, right? If they want to go to a tech college, which, by the way, tech colleges are very much part of the Wisconsin idea as well, you know, to go out and you know, learn a really good skill that's really important. We have got great faculty in the tech colleges that can help them do that. If they want to go out and you know, kind of get involved in the UW, then the Wisconsin idea, come to the UW system, they should be able to do that too. What this is about is restricting the choices that future generations of Wisconsinites, and they're all working Wisconsinites too, by the way, because the rich will go, rich kids will be able to go somewhere else and still get access to this kind of great education. So that's what this is about.
Folks, you're listening to Town Call across Civic Media. We are joined by Professor John Shelton here on a Thursday edition of Office Hours. If you want to join in the conversation, 844-967-2789. And just to close with this portion of the piece over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Professor Shelton, 10 of the UW system's 13 campuses are expected to face a combined $60 million deficit by the summer of 2024. A recent report found Wisconsin's public university system is among the worst funded in the nation. In-state undergraduates will pay an average of 5% more in tuition next school year, the first increase after a decade of frozen rates. So not only is now we seeing with the tuition freeze, students being affected, and they're going to be part of the solution to make up the deficit here, but we're seeing this cut from the state and this lack of investment. It is 10 of the 13 campuses that are going to be affected. I have a feeling that between now and summer of 2024, next year, that we are going to see a lot more stories about faculty cuts and furloughs at not just UW Oshkosh, but around the entire state of Wisconsin.
Yep. And this is... That's absolutely correct. And remember that this is a political choice that's been made, right? Austerity is not the weather. We're sitting on a $4 billion budget surplus. We can easily deal with this. We can easily deal with this problem. But
can you define austerity for us real quick, Professor, for those
at
home?
Yeah, great. So austerity is the idea that governments need to do less, to spend less money, to have lower expectations in order to avert budget deficits, which are almost always politically constructed, right? That we have plenty of wealth in this country, in this state, you know, to be able to fully fund our public institutions. We've just had reactionary politicians choosing not to. But I want to tell you one other thing about the kind of, one other part of the story that you're going to see over the next year. And those are our higher ed unions organizing to avert this. Because what we care about the Wisconsin idea, we care about our students, and we're never going to stop fighting for those things. And so I can't talk too much about it now, but we have some big things in the works that are going to help to build a better future in the face of this set of political choices that really seek to, you know, take away what's possible for our students.
Sounds like people will have to show up to the next episode of Office Hours then to hear about it. Am I right?
Yeah, this will be one of those like 19th century serials where we drag this out for weeks and weeks.
Hey, I love the comic book ending where you got to stay tuned for next week's edition to be able to find out how the story ends. Professor right. Shelton, we really appreciate you joining us here on Town Call on this Thursday afternoon. Thank you so much.
Take care, guys. Have a good weekend.
You as well, folks. If you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast, Civic Media. We'll be back tomorrow at 12:15. Talk to y'all then.
Take it easy, party people.
This land was made for you and me.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' hot Cheetos chicken on a stick? Deep-fried old-fashioned? Or Pino pretzel popper brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long. Close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino pretzel popper brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.